It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profile. Portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Echoes. I'm Paula Schiller. From time to time, ethnomusicologist Tom Johnston of the University of Alaska Music Department has come in to give us some insight into Native music. Today we turn to southeastern Alaska and the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian, all part of the larger Northwest culture that is so famous among anthropologists for its wood carvings, sophisticated social structure, and elaborate potlatches, and where songs have traditionally been a precious commodity.
Songs amongst the Tlingit are proprietary. They own the songs, and they're just like property and very valuable. And when you give a woman from your clan in marriage, you give a song or two with her, and that's valuable property. If someone drowns in your canoe and it's your fault, you can offer indemnity by giving them some of your valuable songs. And you can trade songs, too. Some of the songs were considered highly valuable. For instance, the Tsimshian shaman songs for healing were greatly treasured.
And these were known by one person who would teach it to another? Is that how the trade would be made?
Generally, they belong in the clan, in the family.
Ah.
And they are inherited through the mothers, through the maternal line. The Tlingit are matrilineal, very strongly so. You inherit your mother's songs. Traditionally, you cannot even sing your father's song.
Mm-hmm. I suppose you couldn't sing another person's song that you happen to hear somewhere either, if it's that person's song. You couldn't.
It would depend on the context. Ordinarily, the songs are performed in a very strictly prescribed context at a social potlatch with much ceremony, and a song will be sung by one group of people to another group of people for a third party, like a very honored guest that was present. And of course you would make yourself ridiculous if you sang an inappropriate song.
Mm-hmm. The potlatch is something that is spread throughout Alaska, but it does originate in that Northwest culture, doesn't it?
Well, it's true that the Northwest American Indian Coast culture, with its potlatch, and certainly at the turn of the century, the very extravagant potlatches where blankets and canoes were burned, and chiefs vied with each other in this sort of conspicuous consumption. It's true that the potlatch is most of all famous in history and the written record from this group down here. But I wouldn't like to venture that it actually spread from there to the Athabascans, to the Eskimos.
It's just the part of the country where it's most known. When you look at the history books and when you're taught in school, that's...
It's most renowned from that area. Certainly.
And part of what we learn is that it is a celebration, and that there's costume involved and
very rich costumes. When they dance at the potlatches, everyone wears very formal attire with tunics with clan emblems on and various kinds of potlatch hats, like the chief's hat, which has feline whiskers and ermine and swan's down, and the conical woven straw hat, which has a number of cylinders at the peak on top of the head. Each one of those cylinders represents a prestigious potlatch that you have given to your clan and the opposing clan as part of your potlatch obligations. And the tunics have beads and designs and emblems. And by looking at someone's dance costume at a potlatch, you can even tell who you may marry. Not who you will marry, but which group of people from amongst whom you may select a spouse. because a raven must marry an eagle, and an eagle must marry a raven. You have to marry across that line, and the dance costumes show you that.
There are other symbols that are on the costumes. I remember at the Festival of Native Arts, the dancers from Yakutat had salmon and beavers.
Right. Both eagle and raven are the two main subdivisions of the Tlingit people, and then there are groups within those. For instance, eagle group includes halibut and killer whale and shark and bear, and raven groups include frog, dog salmon, coho, sockeye.
Animals and symbols turn up in the songs.
Yes, they certainly do. Particularly raven. Raven appears in a lot of legends and mythology as being the originator of things and a mischief maker and a prankster and trickster. For instance, one of the Yakutat costumes that you mentioned, I noticed at the Native Arts Festival, it has a white raven and a black raven on it, and some other drawings like a pot of petrol. These drawings aren't very clear, they're sort of mystical and rather fragmented, but everybody amongst the Tlingit anyway, certainly at Yakutat, knows the story, and so they can piece it together from what they see on the costume. And that was the time that Raven went down Petrol's chimney to steal his fire, and Petrol poured pitch down the chimney, and White Raven became black.
We have a song, several Raven songs, or songs about Raven or have Raven in them. Is there something we should know before playing the first song?
This first song is sung by Catherine Mills of Hoona, and it's talking about the Raven people who are going to dance for the eagle. Let's hear Catherine Mills. A raven, daughter of eagle from the box house, she came to his wolf. That means another clan. They look upon me as a picture of my aunt. That means she resembles her forefathers. Just like the spirits of an Indian doctor, they all went away. Eagle clan from Birch Bay in Glacier Bay. Let us dream about you at times. Now the people that song is being sung to, of course, would understand what that means, but don't ask me what it means, mm-hmm. because it's certainly very allegorical. Notice about the sound of this music that the drum very often occurs on the offbeat, where the vocal accent is on the downbeat, and then on the upbeat, the drum is struck. And this is very different to Athabasca music, where the drum is always very heavy on the downbeat. You notice that in a number of these songs.
I was going to say, we have a chance to hear that again, in case you're like me, I didn't pick that up the first time I heard it. The next one that we have is called the Thank You Song.
This is a funeral potlatch song. It's one of the joy songs that come after the crying songs. Let's listen to Catherine again.
Thank you.
translation of that that goes, the raven's children, the maternal uncle, you give it to me like a glass of water. You let me drink so I can get my bearings. After that, I always have good feeling. I breathe deeply after that and do not feel any more sorrow. Again, that's cryptic to us. But
yeah, but I think you sort of get the gist that just like a drink of water refreshes and revives, that you're getting over your grief with this song.
How many different kinds of potlatch songs are we have? We've had welcoming songs.
It rather depends on the English words that you use to classify them. But there are coming in songs and welcoming songs and thanking songs where you thank the host. And then there are sad funeral songs, which they call, which Captain Mills at Hoona calls the crying songs. And then the joy songs. And there are the Simpson shaman songs, which are used by the Tlingit, and many categories of songs, like love songs and children's songs, some classes of which have died out.
The song that we're about to hear has a note attached to it. It's a dance song to be sung after adultery has been committed.
That sounds a very strange category, doesn't
it? Does.
But Catherine Mills tells me that if a man has been unfaithful to his wife, that he stands a better chance of being forgiven if he sings this song.
A song from Catherine Mills of Hoona. We also heard from ethnomusicologist Tom Johnston of the University of Alaska. For Chinook Echoes, I'm Paula Schiller. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Echoes. I'm Paula Schiller. Today we continue a conversation with Professor Tom Johnston, ethnomusicologist at the University of Alaska. We had been talking about music from the Southeast in the Tlingit, Haida, and Simpson traditions. In particular, we discussed the ownership of some songs and the different kinds of potlatch songs. We turn now to a related subject. One of the most famous artworks of the region is the Chilkat blanket. The blankets are mostly found in museums these days. They are easily recognized by the figures woven in black, white, and blue on a yellow background.
The word for it in Tlingit means the dancing fringe. The fringe that dances when you get going with the songs, it waves, it has a long fringe, maybe 12, sometimes 24 inches long, and it bunches up rhythmically at the high points of the music. It's made of mountain goat wool on shredded cedar bark and involves an awful lot of labor. It used to take the women years to make one. And it's woven in the round, so that the correct way to view one is not laid out flat against the wall, say. It's wrapped around a person. It's designed for that. And the carving on it is actually, it's woven. Mm-hmm. When it's made, it's woven in the round, which is rather a tricky process. And only just now, I understand, the Tlingit people are getting back, certain specialists are getting back into making the famous Chilkat blanket. Both the old ones and the new ones that are currently being produced are worth an awful lot of money, and museums will pay $20,000 to $30,000 for a good Chilkat blanket.
Along with the Chilkat blanket, I've seen in the dance groups that come up are the red and black robes with buttons on them.
Yeah. That's very important in Canada amongst the Haida. Mostly in Alaska, it's the Haida group at Haidaberg that wear that. And when I was down at Haidaberg High School recently, the children were staying behind. 20 or 30 children were staying behind after school each day making those Haida button blankets in red and blue and wearing them as dance uniforms when they rehearsed.
The buttons on the blankets are along the borders, and also they with buttons they've designed pictures of the various animals that are important. Animals, as we said before, figure in the songs.
In the stories and the legends and the myths of the Tlingit people, the animals of their environment are totems. They're considered to be originators of the clan. That's why they're called raven, eagle, and so on. And on the totem poles, which are really stories in wood, you see bear and wolf. I believe we have a song about wolf and raven. Yes, the words of this song describe the way that raven side to side. And when they sing the song in the dance, they imitate the bird walking, the way it moves.
And when we hear the words, are we going to understand that they're talking about animals?
Some of the syllables in this song, like e, ya, ha, he, ha, some people call them nonsense syllables. But actually, they're more like memory syllables. Because, for instance, nonsense syllables would have no meaning at all. But these syllables actually remind the singer of what notes to sing. They're memory syllables for the song. So they're not really nonsense syllables. Also, some of the sounds, like caw, caw, represent animal cries, such as raven and walrus grunt, and so on. Couldn't attend at that time because she was out washing people's clothes. Finally, they managed to kill the worm by stabbing it with their hunting knives. But that was after the earthquake, when it had made the whole village tremble. After they managed to kill the worm, apparently milk is supposed to have poured out of its various holes in the worm. And then the girl went away into the woods and never came back.
And it's a children's song.
Yes, and it's from a story.
Let's hear it.
Songs called children's songs, and it stands apart and distinct from the potlatch songs, and so I imagine that the there wouldn't be any really strong proprietary rules about it.
The drum sound in that, I was listening particularly to the drums, it's a different sound than the Eskimo drums that we hear. It's a mellower...
Eskimo drums are played in large groups. You always get four or five drums, so it's a very heavy resonant sound of many different pitches. Also, the Eskimo drumming is gapped and irregular with many different varied rhythms, whereas this tends to be more steady and consistent.
There's another kind of drum that isn't used very much that I've read about, and I think I've seen pictures of the box drum, which is, tell me how it was used.
Yes. Well, many people do know, of course, that the Tlingit have got large wooden chests. These valuable old wooden chests are found in Tlingit homes and in Alaska museums and in museums around the world, as a matter of fact. They were collected by the early explorers. These chests are for storing valuables and clothing, and they have very stylized artwork on them, and often beautiful carving in the round, which extends around the corners of the box. Well, the Tlingit box drum is named because it's rectangle, it's the shape of a box, and on top is generally a clan emblem. For instance, many box drums have got a large killer whale fin sticking up on top. And there's two holes, and the box drum is suspended from the ceiling of the ceremonial house. The ceremonial house has got a house, carved house front, and maybe a totem pole, and inside are various plaques and murals. And the box drum is suspended from a beam, and the player, who is one of the potlatch officials, after the coming in song, the people gather around in a circle underneath the beam, and the player climbs up on the beam and sits on the beam and kicks the drum with his heel. And that is the Tlingit box drum. It's not used very much today, but it can be seen in the southeast.
The song we have coming up seems to be different from the others.
It's sung by Joe Johnson Sr. of Ork Bay, near Douglas Island, near Juneau. And in it, there isn't a regular drum rhythm. And like you say, it's a very unusual song, and it was part of the ceremony at a potlatch. And also notice how he introduces this very fast tremolo into his voice. Let's listen to Joe Johnson Sr.
Ain't
Senior that sang that last song, he has died since I recorded that in 1974. And which goes to show how many of the old people who know the valuable songs are passing away, and we just hope that the young people are learning them and are able to keep this very valuable and beautiful musical heritage going.
A song about Wolf falling into the water by Catherine Mills. You have been listening to Chinook Echoes with Professor Tom Johnston, ethnomusicologist. I'm Paula Schiller, and Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.